Yo, parish orphans and retrogrades, happy Monday if such a thing exists. Today, I come to you, as always, to re-Catholicize the world, American culture, and Catholics themselves. This is a task that traditionalists, so-called traditionalists, have utterly failed at. And they've utterly failed at this because, as you've heard me say countless times, Catholic traditionalists don't know what they're fighting for, generally speaking. They're as deeply infiltrated by feminism as the rest of the culturally Catholic, secular kind of Catholic church, and the rest of the Christian denominations as well, in some measures they're worse. And this was completely evident in the recent interview by Daily Wire's Andrew Klavan of Pearly Things, Pearl Davis. Now, I was surprised. This happened, I think, Thursday of last week. I was surprised to find such deep confusion on either side. Now, I've talked to Pearl a lot behind the scenes, two times on her show. I don't think she's ever been on my show, but a lot behind the scenes also, and I've kind of been a guest on her show once and then a debater against some aspect of the red pill the second time I went on with my friend Andrew Wilson. So I know there's some confusion there. The funny thing is, Andrew Klavan, who's a Protestant Christian, brought her onto his show at Daily Wire. It's a show with, a background Protestant point of view. And I sort of assumed that he would make some of the defenses against her crypto-feminist assault on marriage that we patriarchists make. Well, Noland, myself, Mike Pantile, Nick Stumphauser, the CMAS crew. And I found very little of that. And actually, I found, because I mean, there's a lot over which I agree with Pearl. She defends some of the more crypto feminist aspects of red pill, you know, saying red, you know, feminism's here to stay, therefore do go ahead and disregard marriage and family, which is the whole point of feminism. I thought that where I agreed with Pearl, I would maybe disagree with Klavan. And where I agreed with Klavan, I would maybe disagree with Pearl some. This wasn't altogether wrong. This is kind of what happened. But I found both of them not just talking past one another, but because neither of them understands or really advocates for true patriarchy, even though they both consider themselves Christian. Patriarchy is just Christianity. It's kind of hard to identify overall who I agree with more, with whom I agree more. In this 35-minute interview between Klavan and Pearl, I don't know how to quantify. If it were a debate, who won? I was surprised the first 10 minutes that I agreed with almost everything Pearl said right out of the box. And Klavan did not begin the interview, like a lot of people will when they're interviewing someone, with overlapping perspective. He was disagreeing with stuff that Pearl was saying in the first 10 minutes. And I was like, no, I agree with that. Some of it was not what I expected, because I don't really watch anyone else's show religiously. If there's one show I'll look at on Daily Wire, it's my friend Michael Moles. But even that, I'm not really a regular purveyor, consumer of content on anyone's show aside, you know, my friend, I'll check what's going on and quite frankly, his channel, sometimes Noel, sometimes Jay Dyer's, sometimes like Avoiding Babylon. But I don't really watch anyone's channel regularly because I'm busy. I got lots of projects. We'll get to their interview in a second. But speaking of those projects, this fall we have What a Woman Is coming out. It's going to rock not just the internet, but the world, because that's going to be viewable on your home screen in your den on Amazon. That's just going to be a very, very big deal. Just wait. I won't say any more. Also, I'm working on a couple other things that I haven't revealed yet. Also, Steph and I are working on a new marriage book. And then, of course, the three times a week podcast that I do, this is one of them. There's specific insular Catholic stuff as well involving this crisis in the church that Pope Francis spearheads, but it's really the crisis of modernism inside the church, which began well before Vatican II in the early to mid 20th century. And this channel has four pillars. That's a corrective of both the culture in the church and the culture in the world. It's patriarchy, which has been looming large lately. It's going to loom large in today's episode. Subsidiarity, you know, local government. Re-education. And right-wing community organizing. And there are four books associated with this channel. Five if you include Steph's patriarchy book. And that's what we have. I've written four books. They're the four pillars of Rules for Retrogrades. If you want to support this channel, like, subscribe, click the notification button. We are now past 50,000 subscribers and we're chasing down 100. We wanted to do it the organic, slow, legit way so we're not a captive creator. If you want to support the channel, hit like, subscribe, click the notification bell, and go to Subscribestar and Locals because we got kicked off of Patreon. I got kicked off of Patreon. For saying 100% of the truth, I got kicked off. So that's what I'm noticing more. My first big takeaway from watching Pearly Things on Andrew Klavan's Daily Wire show, I expect to agree with both of these people, maybe in different ways, with two out of every three things they said. I was noticing I'm disagreeing with two out of three. I'm only agreeing with one out of three things that either of these conservative right-wingers are saying. And I don't mean they're not conservative. I just mean they're conservatives with worldviews that are diminishing the other truths that they're saying. I disagreed with them each, Andrew Klavan and Pearl, about twice as often as I expect. And that's funny because I talked to Pearl some. I was really surprised. There was not much clarity with this, even though both of these people claim to oppose feminism. What's going on? I think I figured it out. There are two big takeaways that keep both of these people from saying the real solution to feminism. One, even though Pearl was raised Catholic, there is an absolute lacuna, willed or maybe not willed, an absolute oversight in terms of Western civilization was built by Roman Catholic norms in the church, but specifically the norms. Neither of them understands this. Every impulse that Pearl and Andrew Klavan intone, express, or even struggle to articulate. And you get what they're trying to say before they end up saying it. That happens sometimes in interviews. It probably happens to you some when you're watching me. Every single one is a Roman Catholic norm that they're either, at times, hitting the nail on the head, because Pearl was raised Catholic, Klavan's a Protestant. There's overlap between Catholics and Protestants, obviously. They ripped off Catholic theology, except where they didn't want to. Then there are times when they're disagreeing with it, even though it's just an error in their mathematics. And they know they're disagreeing with it. And then there's a third case where with both Pearl and with Andrew Klavan, they don't get why their own math isn't working out. Their numbers aren't checking out at the bottom of the algebra problem. And they don't get that it's because of one of the other places where they, a Christian, disagreed with the Roman Catholic norms, which on sex and intersexuality are just natural law norms. They actually predate Jesus. So this, they're far more together than they disagree. They disagreed plenty in this 35-minute interview. It's worth a watch. They're both good faith actors, good people. I didn't mean conservatives like as if either of them is a rhino or something like that. I just meant both of them have enough errors in their worldview, specifically on intersexuality, that come from an error in their worldview writ large. Not understanding how large Roman Catholicism loomed. So that's the first thing that they both really shared in common. First theme. The second big theme is because of their misunderstandings about natural law and Catholic norms, which inform all the other right things they're saying, neither of them wanted to be politically incorrect about sex. Neither of them wanted to say that contraception, premarital sex, cohabitation before marriage, and divorce themselves are really, really bad. Both of them are, because they don't have a truly Catholic worldview, both of them are dancing around these issues and then issues which are downstream of these issues. And so the most they can do is be a kind of superficial anti-feminist. And I've told Pearl this. You want to be all the way anti-feminist, you have to be a patriarchalist, which means you have to believe in marriage. If Andrew Klavan wants to be all the way anti-feminist, he has to become a patriarchalist. He'd probably have to become like a trad Catholic to do that, or just a true Catholic to do that. Okay, so here's areas. I'll just give this to you now. Parish orphans, retrogrades. At the outset of, I'm going to play some clips for you. I'm going to tell you first where they both get something wrong. These aren't specific points, but these are themes that will be evident in the clips. I'm going to tell you where Pearl gets something wrong, where Pearl swings and misses. I'm going to tell you where Klavan does. So here, we'll start out egalitarian. They both get the following things wrong. A, they both wrongly believe marriage is a high-risk proposition and call marriage a high-risk proposition. They both believe that. Pearl says because it is, she's really insinuating strongly and then fudging about whether she is or not, that men shouldn't get married. Klavan's saying it's a high-risk proposition, but men should get married. I submit to you, if you know your ass from your elbow, marriage is not a high-risk proposition. And I'm using the basic formula in tort law that this famous lower court judge called Learned Hand, Judge Learned Hand, used for assessing risk. It goes like this. B is less than PL. The burden to make a change to something you're doing, like stop getting married, men, or begin getting married, men, or anything else, the burden is less than the probability of a loss times the relative size of that loss. And it helps human beings make prudential judgments. So in B is less than PL analysis, marriage is actually not a high-risk proposition. Both Pearl and Klavan are wrong. Because I'm not trying to marry multiple women. And I've heard Matt Walsh actually intone this pretty well. And I've heard Knowles intone this very well. No surprise. Klavan needs to listen to the two Catholics on Daily Wire on this particular issue. Marriage is a high-risk proposition, they both think. They advise differently, given that given, but they both seem to cede to the red pill that marriage is a high-risk proposition. And I would just say, so that's the thing that they both whiff on, the first one. I'm going to go to some more, but I would just say as a final nota bene at the outset, it feels like being gatekept to keep the conversation between a kind of what Pearl calls a trad con, Klavan. She calls them trad con, which they don't mean trad in the true sense of liturgy or anything like that. They don't. These are secular people, basically. She means basically a light feminist conservative, not a far left feminist, a feminist conservative, which is Klavan does sound like a lot of the times, okay? And then a kind of red pill light, which is how Pearl has fashioned herself. Remember alt-light, alt-right? She's like red pill light. the conversation is stuck in this false Hegelian dialectic, kind of conservative feminist versus red pill light, in order to perpetuate feminism. Whether or not they know they're doing it, they're being used. The solution to feminism light, feminism radical, and red pill, light and radical, all four of these worldviews, is patriarchy, which requires prayerful, sacramental matrimony. And the view of wives as submission, all the other things we're always talking about. But it feels like being gatekept because I know both sides. I know Daily Wire. I know Pearl. These are all good people, sincere people, I think, in most ways. I just, why not have a conversation with a patriarchalist? Why not get Will Noland on Pearly Things? Why not get Mike Pantile on Daily Wire? Or you know, I've been on Pearl's show. But if you want to see Andrew Klavan, how your ideas play against someone who can answer all the questions that you said Pearl dodged, but still agrees with her on some of the stuff that you disagreed with her on, have a patriarchalist on. Okay, so they both wrongly believe marriage is a high-risk proposition, A. B, they both wrongly believe men have premarital sexual freedom. They both say that at one time or another throughout the 35 minutes or directly imply it. Men do not have, neither men nor women have sexual freedom in the state of nature. There's licentiousness, there's license, where you have freedom that you can disorder to do the wrong thing. It's like saying you have the freedom to murder. Murder violates the natural law. You can ill use your freedom and go murder someone and then suffer the consequences. Similarly, you can ill use your license and go have premarital sex and abuse sex, which is for procreation and for marriage, for something it's not for. But even Klavan admitted to Pearl, he was like, yeah, well, part of the reason marriage is a high-risk proposition for men is because they're trading in something very dear to them, their sexual freedom. Well, that's wrong. Men never had sexual freedom in the first place. Now, I think Pearl was nodding her head because she agrees with this. Nope, they're both wrong. All there is to trade in for a single man as he gets married is, well, I guess, yeah, I'm trading in sexual licentiousness. But he doesn't have to. He could keep having licentious sex with people other than his wife. Having sex with people before your spouse, but dig this, before and after marriage isn't that different. It's all an abuse. And guess what? Sex before marriage makes you 5 or 6 times more likely to get a divorce. Sex with someone else after marriage might make you more like 20 times or 30 times more likely to get a divorce. But it's all going to mess up your marriage. And neither of them seem to realize this because they both acknowledge that men hold sexual freedom before they get married. They don't. You have freedom. The only way to use liberty, ordered freedom, is to not have sex before marriage. And they both seem to disagree with this. A couple of Christians. So that's issue number two. They agree with, and they're where they agree with each other and are wrong in so doing. C, they both vastly underdiagnose. This is related to point A, the value of the three biggest marital guarantors. The way, in other words, the reason they both think marriage is a high-risk proposition in A is because they both vastly underdiagnose three premarital tells. There are three tells that any single man who's thinking about popping the question can use to make divorce an absolutely low-risk proposition. And neither Klavan, who thinks he's defending marriage, nor Pearl will admit it. Now, I've never talked to Klavan about this, but I have talked to Pearl about it, and she dodges. She dodges hard. Prayer during marriage. If you commit to praying together with your spouse, do you know what this does statistically to the odds of ever getting a divorce? Get this. This is in the 90s when divorce was higher than now too. So this will be even starker statistics now. I've shared this with Pearl and she just dodges. because it's not what she wants to say. It's what she accuses Clavin and the Tradcons of. If you commit to praying every day with your spouse, particularly among Christians, where it's a sacrament, you're only one out of 1,152 marriages comprised of mutual joint prayers daily will get a divorce. That is less than 0.1%. It is almost impossible to get a divorce if all you have to do is pray together, hit your knees, and pray with your wife 5 minutes a day. The statistics strongly show this is in the middle 90s they did it, and they reran this in the middle 20 teens. And they said, hell, it held good. Pearl and the red pill guys, who she's always trying to impress and trying to be a part of the red pill, they always say, what can they do? What can they do? Pray with your spouse. Well, what if we're not Christian? Well, if you want to not get divorced, if you want marriage to not be a high-risk proposition, become a Christian for no other reason and pray with your spouse. Well, that's what the numbers show. Less than one in 1,152 marriages where you pray. So that's neither Pearl nor Clavin understand the profundity of that devastating statistic. That means men who are getting married, let's say you're getting married tomorrow. I'm talking to you, John Q. Public. John Q. Public's getting married tomorrow. What can I do? Marriage is a high-risk proposition. I heard this from Pearl, and Clavin even seeded it. He said I should take that risk, roll those dice. It's not a damn high-risk proposition. If you want it to be a low risk, here's something you can do. Every day of your marriage, hit your knees and pray God with your spouse. Your odds just dropped to 1 in 1152. What Pearl said to me when I raised this with her, both in person and on Twitter, she said, Tim, but not everyone's Christian. Oh, okay, become Christian. You see this? I'm always at the back alley evangelization. That's always what I'm after. It's fine to become Christian just because you like the cut of the jib of one or more of the sacraments. I don't care. It also proves the efficacy and the veracity of Christianity, baby. Become Christian. Pray with your spouse daily. Your odds are less than 1 in 1,000. But Clavin and Pearl don't know that because they keep calling marriage a high-risk proposition. Also, as part of this third thing that they both get wrong, neither of them seem to think premarital sex raises the odds of divorce. And once again, Clavin says some things that show he still agrees with Pearl on this more than me, even though he and I are both defending the institution of marriage. They both seem to think premarital sex is either okay. I won't get into personal stuff, but they both seem to think premarital sex and cohabitation are either good things or neutral. Here are the facts, and I shared this with Pearl as well. I haven't talked to Clavin. When I lost my job, son Spencer was very, very nice to me. He's close with Knowles, and I like these people, okay? They're sincere, but they're missing some major angles that make them both not get it. I shared with Pearl the statistics on what having premarital sex does to your marriage. With two or three partners, it goes up to about 4 times as likely that you'll have a divorce. With 5 or 6 partners, it goes up to 4.55. With 10 or more partners, it's between 6 and 7 times as likely you'll have a divorce. Why is this relevant? I haven't listened to Clavin as much, but he seems to undervalue this. If you want to not get a divorce, just don't have premarital sex. Just strongly insinuated by the numbers. Pearl, though, is more damning to her perspective because she is with the red pill guys. She says, just, you know, have premarital sex. It'll actually make you a higher value man. No. And she actually offers this as a way to avoid the ills of divorce. No, it makes it more likely to divorce. That's like saying you want to avoid cancer? Go in the sun lots. Hang out. Let your private parts hang right near your microwave. hang out, buy a house under power lines. That's how you can avoid cancer. No, this makes divorce much more likely. Cancer, the cancer of divorce, becomes much more likely when you have premarital sex, particularly at higher levels. And Pearl literally said this is an alternative or a solve for divorce. Wrong, because the red pill says that in general. Damning. Patriarchy has the solution. Marriage is not a high-risk proposition if you play by the rules. And when you have your wife pray with you daily, you also do a little Bible reading. Read any of the 8 passages in the Bible where it says a woman has to submit to her husband in all things. When you're praying and you're good to her, she'll love this. And then you're actually an alpha. An alpha is someone who is followed by the rest of the pack. You're not an alpha. Even if you earn $100 billion, you're not an alpha if your wife divorces you and takes your shit. You're a beta. Oh, and then they both ignore the fact that contraception makes divorce before or during, makes divorce up to twice as likely. So they both just completely ignore that because they're both politically correct. They're not going for the real solution on intersexuality. Only patriarchy gets it. She talks about submission some, which is cool, but she doesn't get it because she doesn't get that all this goes along with it. Now, point number 4, they both actually agree about, and they're both wrong about. They both seem to endorse premarital cohabitation. There's some neutral or better mention of premarital cohabitation here, which is just idiotic. This always means premarital sex, and this always means divorce is more likely. And cohabitation itself makes eventual divorce more likely, not less likely. Sorry, guys. The thing they also both agree about and are wrong about is they both ignore something called a sortative pairing. It's a biological principle whereby, I think Clavin would be more amenable to hearing about it. Men who are not virgins, it's a biological principle, men with higher body counts, men who are less attractive, deserve, according to nature, and will pair better with women who have a similar body count, higher body count, or are less attractive. They both talk about, especially Pearl, all men is wanting a virginal woman, which should be true, isn't always true. A lot of men don't care. But they don't talk about women. And I've interviewed almost 200 women for Return Matchmaking. Every single one said lower body count for men is better. They care a little bit less when men fail to meet that benchmark than men do when women fail to meet the benchmark. But every single one out of like 175 women we did virtual or real interviews with indicated lower body count is better. And Will Nolan's the one that taught me about assortative pairing. Even biology, typically middling men go with middling women in nature, in populations of wolves, other mammals. And both Clavin and Pearl tended to talk, even though they're disagreeing, they both tended to talk wrongly, erroneously, about not enough marriageable women without ever saying there aren't enough marriageable men. They're just talking about ideal women and ideal men. I agree. There are very few ideal women, but there are very few ideal men out there that deserve them. Most people are mediocre, right? Mediocre men deserve mediocre women and vice versa. This is mainly a Pearl thing, I guess, but I heard some more agreement with Clavin there than I expected to. And the other big one is they both dance around divorce as a kind of institution that should be treated with kid gloves out of political correctness. They do so in different ways. But I'd say, look, divorce is vast failure. Yes, by out of control, screechy women who have failed in the most fundamental ways, but also out of control men who have failed in the most fundamental way. They're not an alpha. And Pearl gets flustered anytime you say this because I'm like, oh, so a man can be an alpha? A wolf can be an alpha if he tries to lead the pack and then he gets put down. That's by definition a gamma, right? The wolf that tries to take control and people are like, shut up, We don't listen to you. That's literally a gamma. And because Pearl's made her whole constituency like divorced men. And so there's a political correctness about it. I like when she says, look, women have contributed to divorce so badly, particularly no-fault divorce, which I want to talk about. And we're going to get into with their discussion. But so these are the areas they actually agree with each other on, and they're both wrong about. Now, I'm going to talk about the specific ways Klavan and Pearl are each wrong, like heterogeneously, where I agree with the opposite person as I go through their interview. Here it is. So I'll just say this for starters. I didn't love Klavan's introduction of Pearl. It sounded like... I'm sensitive to this. When I go on a more politically correct show, like if I go on like Matt Frad's show or Trent Horn's show, Trent didn't do this, but if I go on a show like that and they're like, okay, here's some crazy person with crazy ideas, like that's, but I like them, they're nice. That's a whack. It's politically unscrupulous. It's bad from the perspective of debate, because it means you're being prejudiced, you're prejudging someone's views. And it ends up subjecting you to a kind of scrutiny where later you just looked biased. Like when I went on Matt Frad's show about intersexuality in 2019, when I announced on his show that I was writing The Case for Patriarchy, and I said, look, women are out of control. No one was saying this back then. I said, women are out of control. Women tend to be insufferably unsubmissive, overweight. The average woman's weight in America is 170 pounds, vastly overweight, and rude, unsufferable, unsubmissive, and overweight. Ungrateful also. And this just set the world on fire. And now, you know, after that, Matt was kind of agreeing, oh, I guess Tim was just the canary in the coal mine on this, at least among Catholics, because now I've been turned around between him and his crazy wife, Steph. It turns out neither of them are crazy. So when you give an intro of a guest, especially one who ends up being right, like, hey, they're crazy, I'm not a big fan of it. Listen to the way that Klavan introduced Pearl.
I have to tell you that ever since I invited her on, people have been coming up to me and saying, I hope you really give it to her. I hope you really, you know, tear her apart. She's very controversial. That's not going to happen. I like her. I think she has a really nice personality on the air, and I agree with some of the things she's saying and disagree with others, and I just want to ask her about it. I don't invite people on to fight with them. I invite them on to let them have their say, whether I agree or not. So, Pearl, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so, I mean, that's fine. It's not the end of the world. But it's odd that when a conservative is inviting another kind of conservative on the show, but two legit conservatives, I'm trying to give propers where they do, they feel the need to do the genuflection, the ceremonial hand washing, and bow to before cancel culture. And say, look, when I'm bringing so and so on, don't get mad at me. That's all he was saying. I didn't love this going on Matt Frad's show. Just say, hey, I wanted to talk to so and so. Their position is interesting, and you're about to see where we agree and disagree. Well, why is that not good enough? Why do you have to do this ceremonial hand washing and all that? It gets offensive, and it's not. And I don't have thin skin. It's fine. It's not a big deal. But conservatives shouldn't do this to each other. You should talk to who you want to talk to if you have a talk show.
Somebody wrote on your channel not too long ago, it was a great point, and they said that when somebody has to preempt something like this, really what he should have said is, if you're upset about this, become somebody who isn't offendable.
Right.
And then just proceed with the interview.
Right. Become ungovernable. Become unoffendable. My friend AJ Barker says no pre-assertive qualifications. I don't love pre-assertive qualifications in general. Like, don't get mad at me, guys. This is just what I think. Just say what you're going to say. Defend it with propositions, with modal logic. And you should be making propositional claims that you can defend. And if you are, let the chips fall where they may. Who cares? Who cares? And it's especially weak when you're not doing a pre-assertive qualification over maybe an especially politically incorrect point you're about to make, but about a guest and their whole life, or at least their entire presence on your show for the day. If you have to justify that, this should, and I mean this for anyone, people that are far more extreme or controversial than myself, if I ever brought EMJ, NJF on this show, I wouldn't say, hey, this is so blah, 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 blah. I would just be like, hey, let's find out where we agree and disagree. But people are so paranoid about being lumped in with certain other people that they do pre-assertive qualification upon pre-assertive qualification, and it is pathetic. You will never, ever see me doing that on a show. I'm not saying I won't have a discussion and eventually be like, okay, well, here's a point we disagree on. But you're not going to see me tripping over myself to be like, we disagree over most stuff. Now, there's a couple things you say that make you really interesting that I like a lot. It's like, if you disagree about like everything, then why bring them on unless it's a debate?
Yeah, it would have been a good thing for her to say, why am I here?
Why am I here?
Why am I here? I'm insane.
Which I'm not going to lie, I've wanted to say before. You're not bringing circus freak shows on your act. Okay. All right. So let's get to the first point. And it's slightly sped up because there's a lot of points here.
In this wonderful marriage, and my wife has made a home for me, yeah, and raised children. Our children are wonderful, and we have this, you know, and I don't think I could have done the things that she did. I'm sure of it. I know I could not have done the things that she did the generosity that she has. I've never met a man who has the generosity of spirit that not only my wife has, but women like my wife have. So is there something there that you're missing? I mean, it just seems like a big blanket statement,
I was just trying to find any data that supported you're better at anything. I couldn't find any.
Uh-huh.
I swear, I didn't start with this opinion. I just would think, well, are we better at cooking? And then all the top Michelin chefs were men.
Yes,
are we better at raising kids? Are we better with babies? But then we're more likely to kill infants. It's almost unheard of for a man to kill an infant in the first year. It's almost 100% women that do it.
Yeah. Again, how many men are taking care of women, children in their first year?
I mean, but then you could look at the elderly, same thing.
All right. So,
So he gets, Pearl started out this interview really strong, by the way. Very strongly. And tapers off fast after about the first 8 or 9 minutes. But really, really robust beginning for Pearl, because she's like, first off, you have Klavan saying that women are more generous than men when it comes to donative giving. This is not true. Men give more than women. So when he's talking about, he said generosity of spirit, I'm not sure what that is, but Pearl's correct. Across all metrics, all of these public virtues, remember, man veer is at the heart of virtue, are men win. Men are more, much more generous in terms of donative giving. Single men versus single women. But she cites some of the other assumed strengths of women to be natural areas of comparative strength when compared against men. And she said, I found out that was wrong. Men are better chefs than cooks. Men are less violent with regard to the very young and the very old. I mean, these are just numbers. And the funny thing is that Klavan kept saying to her before the interview, I saw a little clip where he said he wants to bring her on. And during the interview, he kept saying, it's like she can't deal with the numbers. And she started out very strong. Even romance, men tend to be romantic, and it has to do with our psychology. We have to be romantic enough to go make the approach to a girl, to put ourselves out there. Women don't do that. Women aren't naturally as romantic. They're more practical. So Pearl's making some really strong points, and then he pushes back in this sort of freaked out way where he's afraid of his own audience or political correctness. You can tell it's a very distinct look, and I recognize it well from some of the Catholic shows I mentioned I've been on. They're just worried about you damaging their bottom line, because there are a lot of conservative women out there who think they're conservative but are very feminist. They'll get mad at you if you're one of these bigger shows in the conservative or Catholic space. So you hear him, oh, well, men just aren't around women. That's why women do more violence to infants. Then she's like, well, what about the elderly? And what about letting the men are around their babies as much as women are? So I'd say strong start, strong open for Pearl, weak open for Andrew Klavan.
In a business deal, you would never sign a contract in business that the other party is paid to leave. It would not be wise, right? If me and you were to do a business deal together, and if I break the deal, I get your children, half of your stuff, and I can ruin your reputation. You would never do it.
Well, I mean,
I'll pause right there. This is something Pearl got from the Red Pill. She lifted this point. They think it's really clever. This is flatly not true. If you have privity to a really to a low risk business deal, whereupon you have reason to know with certitude, hey, this party's not going to walk with my money, but they have a liquidated damages provision as a torts attorney. And, you know, I can say this. There are times when the other party, because they're more interested in whatever benefit they're conferring on behalf of the contract than they are in walking away with money, your money in their pocket, because they have a really easy shot at making a lot more money or at getting some asset that they wanted more than the money they spent to begin with. That's just not true. There are times when there are liquidated damages clauses in contracts where you're like, well, technically, yeah, you could take your money and walk at any time, but you wouldn't have joined the deal. You wouldn't have partnered with me if you didn't already know that and abnegate the possibility. So this just isn't true, and it's something the Red Pill has been saying everywhere. You would never do a business deal if it looked like a marriage contract. And talking about a marriage contract is very Jewish. This is not a Christian. It's a sacrament. It's a covenant. And so we don't just talk about it as a contract. This is literally something Dennis Prager says, and he says, look, for us, this is a contract and nothing more. That's fine. This just isn't the vast majority of the men that are subscribing to Klavan's Protestant content or Pearl's Red Pill content. These are mostly white American Christians. So I'm gonna talk to white American Christians. Go back to the faith of your fathers. There are contracts where there are liquidated damages provisions, contrary to what Pearl just said, totally wrong. And B, marriage is not just a contract in the first place. That's a Jewish idea. The Christian idea is it's a contract plus. It's a super contract, a covenant, a promise before God. Someone will go to hell for violating it with you. Pearl, let me ask you this. I'm talking one Christian to another, this is what she assiduously avoids. The best legal protection I could have is if they said, okay, the other party might be able to suffer certain hell if they divorce me or they break the contract, but God has promised that he will send them to hell for violating the contract with me. Yes, I will take that contract 100 times out of 100. All I have to do is make sure that the adverse party, my future wife, under these conditions, is a serious enough Christian to take that proposition of eternal damnation seriously. That's literally what it is. Jesus says, a man who divorces his wife and marries another will go to hell. So it's a very good deal between and among first world, whatever, Christians. I don't really care about people who aren't Christians. I'm just going to be honest right now. I care about evangelizing them, but people that hear the gospel and say, no, I don't want to, but I might want this benefit called Christian matrimony. Well, you don't get the benefit without becoming Christian. Become Christian, even if it's only to get married, become a real Christian. And then yeah, I care about you. I care about bringing the gospel, but you don't get to take our stuff. I thought Pearl objected to this. She objects to a woman taking a man's stuff as if it's her own and then divorcing him. You don't get to take our shit. Secular world, like matrimony, whereby the man and the woman are guaranteed a kind of path to heaven if they do it right. And they're guaranteed that they're not allowed to divorce each other. Only world philosophy where women and men promise each other they won't divorce under any circumstances, mind you, because I'm a Catholic. You don't get to take that and then say, but I don't want the Christianity. So she's just wrong across the board, and he doesn't correct much. He pushes back, Klavan does, but he doesn't correct using the right terms.
And it's not uncommon.
But
30% of divorces, 30% of divorces are malicious.
So people who are married are happier, healthier, they have more sex, they live longer. So about 1% of business startups succeed. Mm-hmm. So it's high risk. Right, to start a business, you pour money into it, you put all your soul in it, you put all that work, maybe your time, maybe you get older, and then it fails. That's 99% of the time it's going to fail. So it's a high risk business, but the payoff can be big. So marriage, too, has become a higher risk business than it used to be.
Why do you attribute it to marriage?
Why do I attribute?
Women tend to select for good looking.
Wait, hold on. I want to pause right there. Klavan's doing an admirable job trying to push back, and he does cite some statistics or takeaways from statistical findings that I've seen that are factual. Men who are married live longer, are happier, less suicide, have sex more frequently. All these superficial but important superficial measures for desiderata, married men do far, far better than non-married men. And she doesn't know what to do with this. She's claiming that he's making a post hoc ergo propter hoc fallacy. That the fallacy means after that, therefore, because of that. Where someone falsely equates a consequent with an antecedent, even though there's not a causal relation, that these men were going to be happy anyway. That's not true. The studies show that men of similar classes have one differentium. Men who make 200, you compare an unmarried 200K earner and a married 200K earner, and the married 200K earner is happier on average, less suicide on average. So she's just wrong. It's not a post hoc ergo propter hoc fallacy, Pearl. And I've told you this before. This is just wrong metadata, wrong data science on your part. You're just crunching the numbers wrong. But what I am objecting to, and I already mentioned it, in a place where they have overlapping error, Klavan and Pearl, even where he's correcting her, is he cedes to her that marriage is a high-risk proposition. And he says, look, if startup businesses succeed like 1 out of 100 times, this is probably true. Marriage is unlike a startup business because with marriage, you have a surefire way to guarantee at least that your odds of failing are 1,151 out of 1,152. Startup businesses don't have this kind of guarantorship. There's no way. All you have to do, if you're like, boy, I've been away from my faith, my Christian faith, for 10 years now. I'm getting married tomorrow. You know what I need to do? I need to go back to church and return to daily prayer and do it with my wife. And you know what? If for no other reason, except to guarantee that my marriage will be a success, I just went from having whatever the odds of divorce truly are, those numbers are a bit hard to get. They say up to 60%, and that's wrong, but they're too high. They go from whatever they are, let's call them a 50-50, to 1 out of 1,152, just by praying together. Starting tomorrow on my wedding day and doing it every day. 5 minutes of prayer together where me and my new spouse hit our knees together and pray. I just guaranteed success. If a startup business entrepreneur could simply just hit his knees and pray for 5 minutes and guarantee 1,151 out of 1,152 over 99.9% success, they'd probably do it. And guess what? Guess what I just proved? That it is not a crapshoot. That you can virtually guarantee your own success as a small business startup person. As a person getting married. Oh, neither of them catch that or don't want to know it. It's, I guess it's too religious for either Pearl or Klavan. I don't know. I'm guessing.
Handsome, healthy, high earning men. Why do we attribute happiness to marriage?
Because I've seen it.
How do you measure happiness?
Well, so she this is the conclusion of her allegation of the post hoc ergo propter hoc fallacy, where she says these men are handsome, high earning, healthy. And so they would have been such anyway, whether they got married or not. And she doesn't understand that the statistical showing, the metadata, all compares, it pre-compresses these distinctions. The numbers she's looked at are the same ones I've looked at. Men of the same identical category in all ways except married, unmarried, always come out on average better across all these categories. Lower suicide, higher overall health, higher overall happiness, higher number of weekly frequency of having sex. The married ones that make 200K all come out better married, happier, better. Married ones that make 200K come out better than the unmarried ones that make 100, whatever. Compare 50 to 50, 100 to 100. There's a reason why. Because marriage was ordained by God. And I get that for normies, and I mean, this is the sense in which both of these are normies. They think that that sounds like John Q. religion. They're thinking like they're in the 90s, when everyone thought, most people in the pop culture thought religion was fake. It's 2024. Most people have been red-pilled on Andrew Klavan, Pearl Davis. Get faith. Get real Christian faith. It is not politically incorrect to talk about, like, you know what? World elites, they do spirit cooking that works and makes them powerful. World elites pray to Lucifer. Good guys pray to Jesus, and he has a direct bearing. If you pray to Jesus, you have a 99.9% chance of marriage success, because miracles are real, because the cross is real. Everyone knows that in 2024 now, and they're still talking like it's 1994. It's really, really lame.
I've seen it. I've seen that all the happiest people I've ever met have been in long-term marriages.
Well, I've also seen the other.
So he misses because he recurs to personal narrative. Well, I've seen it. That's weak, and it sounds like she had the upper hand there. All he had to do is say, you're compressing the metadata wrong. You're not understanding the ways that the premises go with the conclusion, Pearl. But he doesn't say that. He looks like he's backed into an irrevocable moral corner by saying, well, I've seen happy people. Personal anecdotes always indicate someone's losing.
I've seen men married and lose all of their stuff.
Right. So you're saying it's a high reward thing.
What does a man get out of marriage that he doesn't get in out of a live-in girlfriend?
Well, that's
okay. So there's Pearl endorsing, or at least being neutral, slightly plus over neutral, with regard to cohabitation. What does a man get out of a live-in girlfriend? Men who just have live-in girlfriends, again, are poorer, more depressed, higher suicide, and also if they have a kid, they're creating a bastard, which leads to broken families. The children out of bastard children are more depressed, higher suicide rate, are more likely to be bullied, more likely to be unhealthy. What does a man get from divorce? From having from not divorcing, or from getting married and staying married? Well, he has a legitimate family and he can raise happy, healthy kids, which is his purpose in life. And she just says, well, there's no difference between cohabiting and marriage. Doesn't sound like a Christian. And I'm not judging her based on personal decisions. I mean, literally, that's not Christian doctrine. She sounds like Christian doctrine is new to her. And there's another time when he, you know, again, I'm not judging, but he said he cohabited with his wife for 2 years prior to marriage. And he doesn't sound like he's not impugning it. Like, this was a mistake I made. I wouldn't be throwing it back in his face if he had. So they both just sound like Christians who don't get it. Christians who don't realize that matrimony was given as a sacrament to Western civilization. And it is the most sure way to get to heaven for people that don't become like Roman Catholic priests. And it's the most sure way to have a happy life.
A strange question, because she's a live-in girl.
He doesn't have the right response to Pearl. This is getting toward the 10-minute mark where she starts making really weak points. But what does a live-in wife confer beneficially upon a man that a live-in girlfriend can't? All the things we already talked about: happiness, health, greater wealth, and the most real thing of all, a path to heaven, a vocation, a purpose in life. And she will furnish you with legitimate children who themselves will share in all these benefits. Children not from broken, it's a broken home, even if you're still living together, but you're not married. You're never married. You always split up anyway. Those children are sicker, more depressed, higher suicide rate, get bullied higher, higher occurrence of LMNOP. You're horrible. I couldn't even believe I was hearing her ask that question, as if the answer would turn in her favor. And Andrew Klavan didn't seem to see it. He missed a trick.
Well, 49% of billionaires are divorced.
So you're saying two things. I mean, it's one thing. See, the point.
Pearl says 49% of billionaires are divorced, and she doesn't get the point, because she's always saying money is like the key to everything. Money makes an alpha. She just disproved her own point. Money does not make an alpha. Money does not make someone happy in their life. If they got a divorce, it's because they're unhappy with their life. And it's because for a man, he was an insufficient leader that failed to garner the obedience, the line item obedience of his wife. So being a billionaire does not an alpha make, Pearly thinks. I've told you this many, many times. But you can be a cuck and be a billionaire. And you know how I know? Because you just said 49% of billionaires are cucks. Their wives, this promise they made before God, and their relatives are now sleeping with someone else. I'm using your statistics. I didn't even find that stat. An alpha is by definition the wolf that the pack follows. If you make $1 billion, you're like, I'm an alpha. Like Bill Gates. Bill Gates is an alpha. Little nerdy Bill Gates. Someone should give him a noogie when they pass by this nerd, who's divorced, by the way. Melinda and him got a divorce. He, according to Pearl, an alpha, he said, hey, take my lead. And the beta wolf, I don't know if they had kids, said, no, I won't. This is the definitional test of what an alpha is. If an alpha claims to be an alpha and the wolves won't follow him, then he's by definition not an alpha. This is how biologists mark the term. And the red pill guys are the ones always using the alpha, beta, gamma, delta wolf pack terminology. They're not using it right. It's not even an analogy. It's a genus species thing, and they're just using it wrong.
I agree with you. I think that marriage can be a bad deal from the stats. But you're saying two things. That, like, you're actually saying that marriage itself, which has made so many of the men I know will attribute not just their success, but their manhood to marriage. They'll say, like, my marriage made a man out of me. So you're saying it's bad even when it's good.
No, I didn't say that.
All right. So this is a good point he makes. She does say she is directly insinuating. I'm not going to show you the symbolic logic, but she keeps saying, no, I'm saying when marriage is good, it's good, but it's very rare. She'll say that out one side of her mouth, and then she does this with me too. But then when he's like, she's like, yeah, you just, even for those happy married men, they could be getting all the same benefits that their wife is conferring from a lived-in girlfriend, and they wouldn't have the countervailing risk, which is always hanging over their head like the sword of Damocles or something like that. So she really is saying even when it's good, it's not good. And she ignores all the statistics I said before. So he actually catches her doing this and makes a fair point. This is where it starts swinging back the other way.
There are good marriages out there.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think it's the rule. I think it's the exception. So why do we have phrases? Why do we have phrases like it's cheaper to keep her? Happy wife, happy life. Why are those common?
Well, I think those are really dumb phrases.
Those are so the reason that there are phrases that cut by and for cucks. Like, by the way, Pearl, every one of the divorced men that whine to you are the ones that were using. Well, for a while it was cheaper to keep her, or happy. I tried happy life, happy wife. And Pearl doesn't get it. She says, look, I spent all my time talking to divorced men. Marriage is horrible because divorce is horrible. But why do we have phrases like happy wife, happy life, and it's cheaper to keep her? Question asked, question answered. You have divorced men who were saying happy wife, happy life because having the non-patriarchal view that all divorced men had leads to divorce. I mean, you can't even say it without laughing. All the men you talk to, divorced, cuckolded men who got taken for a ride by their wives, were the ones that said, happy wife, happy life. I need Will Noland on this show with me so we can laugh about this together. She asked the question without even getting the point. Question asked, question answered. Yes, the non-patriarchs out there that are trying to stand in as real men, patriarchs, the ones that were saying, well, I'm not the leader. My wife and me are co-leaders, or maybe my wife is boss. Go ask the boss. Happy wife, happy life, after all. They all wind up divorced. And Pearl's saying that, you know, rattling this off without understanding that she's answering her own questions. Men, if you don't use scripture as your guide, if you don't use scripture as your guide, pray daily, read a couple passages in scripture daily. Women have to submit to you in all things. You need to marry a woman who really believes this. That's the tether. That's the slam dunk. Vouchsafing your marriage. Then, of course, you're going to get a divorce. We say a dude LARPing as someone else, pretending he can, I don't know, do something that men can't do, is going to be bad at it. Well, a married guy LARPing as a patriarch, but espousing the opposite philosophy, happy wife, happy life, women are really in charge. Of course, they ought to get divorced 100% of the time. We ought to expect to see it anyways. 100% of the time. I'm shocked that there are so many men out in the burbs, lots of my neighbors, who say things like happy wife, happy life, and cheaper to keep her, and wind up married through it all. Pearl's surprised that it's like a 50 to 60% divorce rate, and basically all these guys say it. I'm shocked that it's not 100% divorce rate among all the cuckolds out there who aren't patriarchs, who let their wives run the household. And Klavan doesn't really know what to say because, again, what I'm saying, Christianity, patriarchy, it's way simpler and it's way too politically incorrect for either Pearl or Klavan.
But well, it doesn't matter if you think they're dumb. It matters that they exist.
But
and why is it, if marriage was such a good deal, why aren't men signing up?
You're talking about two separate things, Lee. You're talking about the culture, which is obviously, we're obviously in a sick culture. We all know, I think everybody knows that. But you're also talking about the question, let me put it to you this way. What do you think a man's life should look like? Because, for instance, I think if I said, what should a man's life look like, it would include marriage and family and children. I think that would be the best thing. Now, you want to say, here's a guy who shouldn't be like that, or here's a society that's falling apart and makes it difficult. Those are two different things. But what do you think a man's life should look like?
I think every man has to decide that for himself.
Right.
So I don't want to just chuckle about Pearl saying this because they both have these relativistic, non-Christian talking points or at least presuppositions, but Pearl has them more baldly. A man has to decide for himself. There's some sense in which that's inarguably true. I'm not saying a man should be forced to get married. But for me, it's very simple. There are two sacramental vocations, two paths to heaven. When I was a little boy, And I was at the Denver airport. I think my dad said I was two or three, and I was pulling out all the Sports Illustrated swimsuit editions. At Denver airport, I was 2.5 years old. Women in bikinis, I didn't know was wrong, you know, or whatever then. I always knew I liked the ladies. So, okay, this is a strong impulse. I never seriously considered discernment because I'm a very social person. I tend to form very, very strong, intimate relationships one-on-one. So I always knew I wanted a wife. I never seriously discerned becoming a priest. I just always knew it wasn't for me. So it's either priest, total celibacy, or a chaste marriage. There's two paths. So I'm not disagreeing with Pearl insofar as I'm not saying someone should have told me to get married or told me to become a priest. Yes, men have this fork in the road. When you're dealing with true culture, Western civilization was built on, it means there's a fork in the road. You either become a Roman Catholic priest or you ought to be trying to get married. She talks as if, I mean, it's just modernism, right? I'm technically, I think, a Christian. Clavin's technically a Christian. I think he pushes back a little on this. But both of them seem to think there's like a world of options at the fingertips that I just don't acknowledge. To me, it's simpler. There's no point to life aside from getting to heaven. There are two paths to heaven. There's two vocations. The matrimony, that are sacramental anyway. You can make up a third and a fourth like John Paul II kind of did, but there are two sacramental vocations. I want one of them. I don't want one of the non-sacramental vocations. The purpose of life is either to get married or become a priest. When you decide, hey, I want to get married, I want the best wife I can get, what do I do for that? Well, you don't run around sleeping with chicks because that makes you 6 or 7 times more likely to get a divorce, and you know women don't want that. So you're going to get less good chicks if you run around sleeping around. It's very simple. My analysis is very simple. And the only rebuttal that Pearl or Clavin would have is like, well, people want the benefits of being a Christian, but they don't want to be Christian. Tough shit. Then you're going to have a shitty life. I mean, remember what Maximus says, where he's like, I've seen the world outside of Rome, and it's brutal. And it's dark and it's cold. I've seen the world outside of Rome. I mean, I'm not saying this can't apply in some sense to Protestants and rather robustly to Orthodox Christians, but I've seen the world outside of Christianity, Rome in that sense. I've seen the world outside and it is brutal and it is cold and it is dark. Men, yeah, you don't have to be a Christian, but don't try to take our shit. Don't try to take our matrimony. The only guarantees on matrimony are among believing Christians. If you're not a Christian, okay, well, yeah, good luck. Of course you're going to get divorced. Of course you're going to see no purpose to life. Of course you're going to be suicidal. If you're not a Christian, then both naturally and supernaturally, before and after the eschaton, things are terrible. If you're a Christian, though, before and after the eschaton, things are going to be okay. Now you have a clear choice. Get married or become a priest. Once you get married, you acknowledge you go to hell if you get a divorce. Therefore, pick wisely. This is how you live your life if you want to have a good life. You don't say, well, I want the benefits of being a Christian without being a Christian. That's not how it works. And again, I don't think Pearl or Clavin are willing to say that because they have such a wide, diverse audience. Well, wide, diverse audience are fake and Jahay. Okay? This is the problem. You get too wide an audience. You're not willing to say obvious shit. You can't get the benefits of being a Christian without being a Christian. Pray daily. You really need the sacrament, but at least you need to pray daily and read the Bible. This guarantees, if you married a fellow Christian, that yeah, she might be able to take your stuff. Same as she could go rob a bank, but that's not freedom. The reason people don't rob banks is because they have to forfeit their life. The reason people don't get divorces is because they have to forfeit their afterlife. You're guaranteeing you're going to hell. Oh, I'm just being too religious. GTFO, man. This is the thing. They won't say the obvious truth. We're talking to white first world nation Christians. That's who the red pill audience is. It's mostly white, mostly first world, mostly Christians. talk to them as if they are apostatized Christians, which is what most of their audience are. Just people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s who kind of left Christianity. And they're saying, well, what do we do? What do we tell them? Tell them, go back to Christianity. That's the solution. I don't even mean because of the Eucharist, that which is really true, or because of confession, which is ultimately true. But I mean because you like our other sacrament, matrimony, and what it gives you. But neither Pearl nor Clavin will say this.
Well, 49% of billionaires are divorced.
So you're saying, you're saying two things. I mean, it's one thing. See, the point where I agree with you is I think that marriage can be a bad deal from the stats.
I think I already.
But you're saying two things, that like you're actually saying that marriage itself, which has made so many.
I already played that one. It's funny that it's genuinely funny. I don't mind. They started replaying that because it's genuinely hilarious. She's like, half of billionaires are divorced. Okay, so do you get it? It doesn't make you an alpha just to be a little pencil-necked dweeb like Bill Gates that no one likes, but he has money. I thought you thought money alone maketh the man, Pearl. He's a dweeb, and he gets walked out on anyway. Well, the lawfare makes that possible. Yeah, the lawfare is feminist and shitty. But why is it a better deal for her to take his money and to be with a hotter dude or whatever it is? Because money doesn't maketh the man. Because a billionaire by himself is not an alpha. Contradicts one of her other premises. That's why she doesn't want to articulate it so clearly.
Very, very careful.
Right. They have to.
Doesn't shame women.
Deal. It's just. Free beauty box, a deep firming serum, and free shipping on all orders. If someone came to you and said, Pearl, you know, I really understand what you're saying about the court system, and I really understand what you're saying about women, but I really want to get married. That seems to me the meaning of life. The meaning of life is to have children. The meaning of life is to build a family. The meaning of life is to have a home. What advice would you give?
I'm not really in the business of giving advice, but I would say get a prenup. Consult your attorney in your state. You have to be careful. I mean, it might be funny to you, but I've seen men on the brink of suicide after this stuff.
Sure.
I've seen men marry, you know, I interviewed one guy who married a traditional Eastern European girl. And, you know, he lost his job. He lost his house. He lost his children. He hadn't seen them in 2 years, even though they were a mile from him. Like, Andrew, these are real things that happen every single day. Men are 9 times more likely to commit suicide after a divorce.
Right.
Men have to be careful. They have to protect themselves.
But I think, all of this stuff I get and I hear that, but I think you're dodging something here. I really do. I think every study I've ever seen shows that a happy marriage makes men happier and makes people happier.
No, wait.
And my experience is that, in that the people I know who are happily married are the happiest people I know. So high risk, high reward. And you kind of dodge the fact that it's high reward. I mean, I guess what I'm saying to you is, like, when you give this general piece of advice,
it's not advice.
Well, when you give this, well,
yeah. So this is where the tide turns, and Pearl just starts saying risibly stupid stuff. Like, one, she says, I talk to these divorced men all the time, and their lives are broken, and a lot of them had money, and their lives are still broken. One, I already talked about this, no small amount, that it disproves one of her other premises that men are alphas just by making a lot of money. It single-handedly disproves that. Secondly, she also misses the point that she mentioned it another point in the interview, that all of these divorced men had said, happy wife, happy life. Yeah, that's every single divorced man I've ever met too. By definition, they're not following the Christian view of marriage. Also, we know from the numbers that the odds are less than 1 in 1,000 that any of those divorced men you're talking to, Pearl, that are crying into their beer, prayed daily with their wives. And we know that they're not reading Ephesians, Timothy, Titus, 1 Corinthians, 1 Colossians, any of the places in Christian scripture which says that their women, their wives, have to submit to them upon pain of mortal sin, because that would violate the numbers. Only at most 1 out of 1,100 of men like that do daily Bible readings and daily prayer with their wives end up getting a divorce. Why? Because those people, it would be acknowledging, yeah, I'll get a divorce. I'll be able to take $500,000 of your dollars, but I'm going to hell. So of course they're not going to do it. See, Pearl will never touch that. But then Klavan starts pushing her, and he's like, okay, back on the post hoc ergo propter hoc fallacy that you allege, Pearl. It's you're misreading the data. Klavan's right, Pearl's wrong. Men of otherwise hold all other things equal, the identical categories, married man's always going to be happier than the unmarried man. And she starts pushing back and trying to reassert post hoc ergo propter hoc. And he's like, no. This is also how I've experienced in my life. This would be the exception to the rule. I don't, because he already produced the numbers and it's so universally true. I have no problem with him adverting to the anecdote, the personal anecdote here, because everyone knows this is true. Happily married people are the happiest people, the best adjusted people. And yeah, it's just rare that you meet someone that's doing marriage patriarchally, where the man's in charge and the woman's not. And they're not squeaking by divorce or whistling past the graveyard by being like, happy wife, happy life. But when you meet one of those, me and my friends, people are like, man, what all my male students would see when they'd come up and be hanging out with me and Steph. Steph looks great. She's beautiful. She's bringing me a lunch. We're laughing together. The kids are well-behaved. We have a good time. Our lives are each other, me and Steph's. Even before I did this, I was a high school teacher, and all my male students were like, my parents and all of their loser friends, they don't make me want to get married. What you and Steph have make me want to get married. I'm like, well, this is what it is if you do it according to Christianity, man. Patriarchy. This is my best friend. I don't hang out at work and try to cut it up or chop it up or shoot the breeze with people in the teacher's lounge because I'm eager to go hang out with this cool chick, Steph. It's fun. I'm eager to hang out with her and our kids together. We go do fun stuff. We do what we want to do. We pray together, but then we play together, play video games if we want to, go do whatever the hell we want. And it's always with each other. And she does what I say, but I'm not giving orders most of the time. If I give an order, she takes it, but that's rare. We're just having a great time, staying fit for each other if we can. That's really important too. Everyone gets that that's sexy and cool. Everyone gets it. Aside from people who are trying not to get it, and Pearl's trying not to get it, and in some ways, Klavan's trying not to get it. And I don't get trying not to get it. But here he's making fair points that she's just really, really trying hard not to see.
Is it saying that this is a bad deal, that you should go into it feeling it's a bad deal? It's a form of advice.
Well, it's a bad deal because women are paid to leave.
Right.
So that's why it's a bad deal.
Right. So...
And we have a culture that doesn't shame women for leaving.
Either. Another good analogy for someone that might be paid to leave is if you have, I forget what it's called, a non-certified investor class in a startup, they can be paid to leave at any time. They can be like allowed to take their money and leave. Why don't they? Because the benefit or the asset that they initially sought in the arrangement still looms larger and more important and with more gravitas on the other countervailing side of the scale to them. The reason I wanted to be an investor in this enterprise is because it's better than my $50,000. Same thing with women. Okay, a woman who marries a great dude, Will Nolan's wife, Rachel, who married one of the world's coolest dudes, Will Nolan, is like, okay, I could take like $100,000 of his dollars if I shattered our lives together to do it. And then I'd be lonely and wanting a guy half as good as him. Why would they do that? That's kind of like an investor in a dynamite company, an investor in, I don't know. I don't know investment. I was going to say GameStop. But I forget. An investor in some amazing .com. That made $1 billion by investing a few thousand. Like, well, they could have taken their money out at any time. Yeah, but they wanted the better thing. There's higher stuff than money. Part of what's in Pearl's way is just the materialism. Like, I agree with her. The lawfare's feminist, and we're gonna close with that. She's right and Klavan's wrong about what no-fault divorce did to men. But it did it to men that were already teetering on the brink of divorce. By definition. And Pearl just thinks, oh, well, if they could take your money, it's not worth doing. That's like saying, Well, if you could lose money, it's never worth investing. And that's high risk. I don't even agree with Klavan that it's getting married is a high risk proposition because of all the tells that are knowable ex ante before.
Yeah, no, I agree. This is what interests me about what you're saying.
Because of that, men have to be very, very careful.
Right. They have to be careful. But then when I ask you how they should be careful besides legal things, all you have to say are just get a prenup and all that. You don't know, is there a sort of woman that you would look for if you were a man?
Childless. I would say don't date women with children.
Of course.
Good advice. Of course. No debt, no tattoos.
Of course, of course.
Personally, I like my brothers to go for more athletic women because we grow them tall in my family. But I'm not really in the business of giving men advice. I think every man has to decide for himself. Right. There's a million other like content creators in the manosphere you can talk to that have literal courses on this stuff of how to vet women. I'm specifically talking about.
I think it's funny. I'm actually the one that turned Pearl around on her own volleyball career. She played college volleyball. I was like, you realize this is feminism, right? And then within a week she did a show on it. She was like, oh yeah, I was lied to, like sport. And now she's kind of back to saying athletic. Well, get thin. I would agree. Get the men, get thin women, submissive women, thin, submissive, domestic. This is what I do big time. And Will Nolan does big time. Thin, submissive, domestic. These are your three goals. Thin almost always means pretty, right? Because women are just pretty. They're the fair sex. They stay thin. They don't have to be athletic. You don't need a chick that can lift a lot of weight or even a chick that runs a lot. Just get a girl that doesn't eat a lot. Submissive and domestic. Wants to stay around home and raise your family, or even before you have kids, wants to stay around home and raise a garden and just support whatever you're doing as your helpmeet. This is what 8 different 20th century Catholic popes called a wife, your helpmeet. She supports your projects. And it not only is it good for your projects, and this is what enables successful men to be more successful, it brings you closer together. You're working on stuff. Instead of working with boss babes at work away from home, if you're lucky enough to be able to work from home and your wife doesn't have any of her own projects, she's just the helper on yours, you get closer. You have something to talk about over dinner. Half the time, me and Steph try to go on a date once a week just because we have 7 kids. Half the time when we go out, we're talking about this channel or something we're doing or one of our books or something one of you guys said to us. It's really fun. The same way you get into a man gets into natural conversation with his workmates. When your spouse is your helpmeet, then you end up talking about work in ways that would otherwise be alienating to a wife if she's got her own job and she can't relate to what her husband's doing. It's so good.
Very, very careful.
Right. They have to.
Doesn't shame women.
Of course, men have to be careful. But the problem is that
society that naturally wants
neither Pearl nor it sounds like Klavan, though he mentions a few things that I agree with strongly. And Pearl says no tattoos, no kids, no extra weight, you know, because it only gets a little harder once you hit 35, 40 to keep the weight off. And it's really important. It's really important for marriage to keep the weight off for both men and women. So I agree with these basic points as to what to look for. But also neither of them, because neither of them wants to alienate their large audience, wants to say no premarital sex, no premarital cohabitation, or very low amounts. No contraception before, during, after marriage. I don't know what after marriage would mean. And you have to pray together. See, none of them want to sound overtly religious. And what neither, the way that they're both very blue-pilled, even red pill Pearl, they're both very blue-pilled because they don't know what's in the air. They don't know what's in the air. Christianity is on the rise. Christianity's coming back. And I don't just mean I mean Christendom, baby. I mean Roman Catholicism. Everyone's seeing the writing on the wall. America, with these plagiarized Christian values without the Christianity, just leads a couple generations later to commandeering, domineering, subjugation by the WEF. That's what it is. That's what non-Christendom leads to. And everyone's gotten hip to it. And they're very blue-pilled, like not wanting to be like Christ is king, follow his rules. don't contracept, don't have premarital sex, don't, like a hippie, don't cohabit with your future spouse beforehand. Neither of them get this. They're both basically endorsing this. And I've heard them other times, Pearl very explicitly, not Klavan, saying, have lots of premarital sex. This is the number one thing that raises your divorce odds by 500-700%. It's very blue pill. And it's ironic because this is supposed to be like a cutting edge discussion, and neither of them would allow a patriarchalist in there. And last time I was on Pearl's show, yeah, she would talk to me, but she was interrupting me in ways she wasn't interrupting anyone else. Because they're like, well, some of these are just very hard and don't have a solution. I was like, I have the solution to every single one of these aporetic problems. They're aporetic means insoluble in Greek philosophy. There are no aporetic problems when marriage. Just got to know what to look for. And they only know some of the more superficial things. Easy tells. Body count. Men and women need to have low body counts if you want to have low divorce chance. Pray together every day. No contraception, no cohabitation, or as little as possible. At least admonish against cohabitation, even if someone did it and made a mistake, or someone has a low body, made a mistake with one boyfriend and had premarital sex. Okay, don't do it again. Neither of them is even saying any of those basic truths.
Protect women.
Yeah, but the literature on what happened to women in divorces is extensive and apt.
Okay, now. I kind of saved it for the end. This is the titular topic of why Pearl is there on Klavan's show on Daily Wire, is to talk about marriage and its end with divorce. And what happens legally under the lawfare or the legal regime of no-fault divorce? Pearl is right. She talks to all these divorced guys that got cucked because they weren't alphas. And she rightly says the legal regime of no-fault divorce is where women initiate close to 4 out of 5 divorces. Women are being manipulative just to take men's stuff, to take low-T men's stuff, high-earning but low-testosterone men's stuff. She doesn't put it that way. I do. Yes, yes, yes. It is feminist. And what I was really surprised and disappointed to find Andrew Klavan saying is that basically the conservative feminist trope and mischaracterization that this only happened, the no-fault divorce regime was an overcorrection of a problem that was misogynistic before, in what can only chronologically be aligned with the fault divorce regime. I was surprised to hear him saying this. Listen.
That's to protect women.
Yeah, but the literature on what happened to women in divorces is extensive and absolutely destructive. I mean,
under the fault regime.
You should read some of the stuff from the 19th century and the early 20th century that women.
I thought Klavan, at least if we're painting in broad strokes, was at least in all the broad stroke measures an anti-feminist. This shocked me that he's saying, oh, you should read some of the literature. Before you had no-fault divorce, women were being abused by divorce. No, that's not true. And Pearl later, she rightly said, she underreacted here, and she wasn't expecting him to say this, which I wasn't either. But that's not true. Under the fault divorce regime, which is what we had before, 1969 is the first state to introduce the no-fault divorce regime. It's really Luciferian. It was California. The last one, ironically, to get the no-fault divorce regime in its lawfare was New York in 2010, surprisingly. So over those 41 years, all 50 American states went to a Luciferian no-fault divorce lawfare, whereupon you can leave marriage at any time without any legal ramification, without any scorn, with no shame. You can just peace out, and this made divorce rates spike. And it was done in the name of feminism. It's terrible for men. And you find Klavan saying, well, yeah, we shouldn't hail this, but because it was an overcorrection, but it was a correction on the fault divorce system, which favored men. And she, Pearl said, this is wrong. I didn't know how to intone it at the time. It's very wrong. The fault divorce system favored, it should just be illegal in society because it wrecks society. Divorce should be illegal. And I'm not typically associated with, it shouldn't be illegalized at the federal level. It should be illegalized at the state level. You just can't get a divorce. If you had a marriage, then you can legally separate for cases of abuse or whatever. The state's not going to force you to live in the same home. But you're not allowed to go separate your assets and remarry. You're just for abusive relationships, you're allowed to get away from each other. That ought to be it. First off, neither of them want to say that there shouldn't even be fault divorce. But Klavan is oddly saying that fault divorce favored men. No, it favored the party that did not fault. Fault divorce holds culpable the faulting party by definition. And he uses the same feminist trope. I was most surprised by this.
We're destroyed and lost everything. No, I mean, look, it's what you're...
I'll go back and let him intone that fully.
Absolutely destructive. I mean, you should read some of the stuff from the 19th century and the early 20th century that women were destroyed and lost everything. No, I mean...
Now, to be fair to Pearl, she's like, what stuff are you talking about? I'm not saying that there was never a woman who fared badly in divorce. I mean, if this is cold comfort, but don't worry. Anyone who gets a divorce and gets remarried, our Lord Jesus says, you're going to hell. That's just Christianity. That's not Catholicism. That's our Lord Jesus in Scripture. So even Protestants that like know how to read the Bible hold this. All Christians, if you get divorced and remarried, it's adultery. And if you die in that state, you're going to hell. So yeah, it kind of pales in comparison for any real Christian, which Christianity being civilization building here in the West says, okay, so you might be depressed, you might be bummed out, and you might be lonely, and you might have half of your shit taken by your former spouse. That all pales in comparison to the fact that if you eventually piece your life back together, get another spouse, you're going to go to hell anyway. You can't really shock us. Nothing's shocking when you're talking about people that are willing to violate the natural law and God's law. Hell awaits them. Don't be one of them. Get divorced and stay married, people, and you'll have a happy life here and after the eschaton.
What you're actually seeing is an overcorrection of something that was bad before. It hasn't always been like
that's
this.
Feminism, what he just said.
And people have always struggled with the idea of marriage too. People have been attacking the idea of marriage since the 18th century. I mean, women especially really started out saying that marriage is bad for women and we're losing all our rights, we're losing all our property. You know, it used to be that when you married somebody, your property became your husband's property. You know, those are the laws that were actually in place.
All I can say here, you don't need my commentary. This is shocking to find Andrew Klavan endorsingly intoning the feminists' push for no-fault divorce. I have no words. I was very surprised. Pearl looked very surprised there. Most surprising moment in the interview. I really couldn't believe that.
And with the first feminist...
Yeah, but men were also responsible for debt. So any debt the woman incurred, it went on her husband.
Yeah, but she was so much less likely to, in those days, to incur the kind of debt that women do now. I mean...
Andrew, you just said that women could lose their property, which would involve the incursion of debt, presumably. So you got to pick a side. And it's all silly anyway, because these are feminist tropes that I was really surprised. I think Pearl was really surprised to hear you bring it up. I don't have a side on this. They both really misunderstand major dimensions of eudaimonia, what makes a human being happy, and Western civilization, and the centrality of the marital Christian vocation of the sacrament. But here she's really, I think she's as surprised as I am to find Klavan saying that, basically all but saying that the no-fault divorce regime was a necessity. It might be an overcorrection, but a correction was needed. That's feminism.
You know, this is strange. What's strange to me is like, I think you have a solid central point, but you kind of have blown it up to something beyond, you're carrying more weight than the argument will hold, I think. And I'm still a little lost in why and how you can say that you're not effectively coaching men to turn away from a high risk, high reward situation which is what men do. High risk, high reward is what men do.
No, again, I think he's wrong to support, in some sense, no fault divorce, in some real sense. He's wrong to go along with Pearl in the assumption that marriage is a high risk proposition. It's just not. I do some high risk things. My day to day marriage is not that. It's my great surety in life, aside from Jesus in you know, the sacrament, the Eucharist. And yet it's funny that there's one thing he said that I did agree with. She is using doublespeak as to whether or not she's advising men against marriage. She really is, insofar as she's adjacent, very directly adjacent to the red pill. She's advising men against marriage. And she keeps saying, no, I'm not. Yet she really is.
Well, when you pull Gen Z, family is on their seventh ranking of priorities.
Yeah.
So if the women don't want to do it, what are the men supposed to do?
Well, how do you think that's going to work out for Gen Z?
It's a fair question.
How do I think it's going to work out?
Yeah. I mean, what do you think a society that's without marriage will look like?
Well, I think it's going to be a single society. So I'm not saying this is a good thing. I'm saying this is what's happening.
Yeah.
I'm describing.
It's really, really, it's called a Mott and Bailey argument. When he's pushing her and she's really being prescriptive, people ought not to get married, then that's the Mott. And then he pushes her a little, then she retreats to the Bailey and she just says, oh, I'm just being descriptive. This is what's happening. I'm not saying it's good. It's a very, very, very basic Mott and Bailey argument. Look that up. There's a good Wikipedia for it. I've talked to you guys about what Mott and Bailey arguments are, M-O-T-T-E. And Bailey, it's castle imagery. She uses this, the red pill uses this on, when they're confronted with the basic catastrophic effects of a single society, that's going to be a non-society. We have plummeting birth rates and, the crypto feminist red pill, like outright feminism, says, don't get married, don't have kids. This just means society will die slow and old as a tree. And when they're pushed on this, they just say, well, I'm not, Rolla Tomasi does it too. I'm not suggesting people shouldn't get married. I'm just saying they're not getting married. Gen Z says when they're polled that this is their seventh priority, ordinarily ranked. Okay, well, they're stupid. If getting married, unless their top six priorities are becoming Roman Catholic priests or religious sisters, then they're stupid. Marriage should be your, if you don't want to be a priest or a religious sister, marriage should be your main focus as a young person. You should try to get married right around the time you graduate high school. These are the happiest marriages. And if it's your seventh priority, then it just means you're dumb and you contribute to the fall of Rome. This was the main mark, sexual licentiousness and lack of interest in marriage in the crumbling Roman Empire. So she says this as if it's an indictment of marriage. It's an indictment of the idiots who don't want marriage, men and women. Both men and women Zoomers are not wanting marriage. And she's saying, I mean, I agree with her. Women are out of control. I agreed with her in all of the ways that she cited that we're making Klavan tug at his collar. But it's also young scumbag men that are enjoying the decline. This is, as a matter of fact, a red pill motto, enjoy the decline. So it's all of Zoomers are guilty here. It's not what about the men though, the way Andrew Wilson rightly points out how crypto feminists or conservative feminists, I guess like Klavan, tug at the collar when someone points out the flaws of women, which are plentiful. The number one cardinal rule of feminism is never for any time, anywhere, say anything negative about a woman. That makes them very uncomfortable. You saw Matt Frad doing it when I went on a show and I was saying, look, women are out of control. I just came from Disney World yesterday. I heard all these screaming harpies screeching at their husbands. They get very uncomfortable. But I am saying, I'm with Pearl on that, but I am saying her statistic she just cited is unisex. Both men and women Zoomers have very, very low on their list of priorities marriage because they're stupid if they don't want to get married.
describing what's happening. I'm not giving prescriptions.
Yeah, you kind of that kind of strikes me as a dodge, though, because, you know, I mean, I want to.
How am I dodging?
Well, because you started out kind of saying men He's do everything right better than women, and
I do think that.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think she was wrong to cite, you know, even in these, any real public virtue will be better expressed by men. In the natural capacity, men will be higher on average. I agreed with her there. But it's a dodge to say that she's not giving men advice not to get married. And I know because she says it all the time. She's leading them to don't get married.
But I mean, that's just not true in my experience. I mean, which is...
Name one thing.
What's that? They make homes and they raise children and they mother children better than men do.
Well, then why don't single mother homes fare better than single father homes?
It's a good question.
Well, it depends, because if you are missing a father and you are a boy, you are missing an essential element to your manhood. And I don't think
so Pearl really did just win that little detente. He said, what's one thing that women are better at? And in some sense, he says mothering, which is sex specific. So it's kind of like ipse dixit. But she's like, no, but I mean, single father homes have better production downstream results with their kids than single mother homes. And there was no answer. He didn't have an answer for that. But she didn't have an answer for just confusion on both their parts pretty much all around. She didn't have an answer for why are you now claiming that prescriptively you're not pushing eternal single life? Because you are. Why are you claiming that you're just describing the views of others? You're actually prescriptively pushing these views on others.
Women are also more likely to abuse children.
But women are around children so much more.
It's funny because
they're just going back and forth on that point.
It's funny because whenever I say anything that makes women look bad,
this is true.
The gut reaction is always to offer an excuse.
No, like,
True. That's true. She did that. I mean, like, there are plentiful ways to use statistics, facts. There are so many that make 2024 women on average look really, really bad. And she had her powder dry. She kept her powder dry. She brought them all to bear in the first 10 minutes. And she's just, this is my thing. I say this in the case for patriarchy. The cardinal rule of feminism is never at any time for any reason say anything negative about a woman. This regime abided culturally from the 1960s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. It's dying now. Pearl's one of the architects of that. I have something to do with it too. You ought to be able to shame women. It works really well. But she's saying boomers, even conservative boomers like Andrew Klavan, get really uncomfortable when you criticize a woman. And he's doing it. He's tugging at his collar the entire time. She's like, here are these statistics that are just obliterate the pure as the driven snow virtue of the average woman. And he's getting really uncomfortable. So she's right there.
I think that feminist women, you know, are offering a lot less to men than women used to do. I just feel like you're talking about two things at once, and then every time I ask you about one thing, you dodge over to another. That's what I'm.
What am I dodging?
Well, if you think men can just do anything women do, and women are therefore unnecessary, and therefore the marriage, except
I didn't say unnecessary. That's not what I said.
Except for the physical production of children.
No, I said that men are better than everything. If I say that adults are better at everything than children, does that mean children are unnecessary?
No, but I would say that adults aren't better at being children.
Yeah, but you return to the ipse dixit thing. It just seems like what will happen when a more politically correct person is interviewing a less politically correct person, they just know that they have to give some pushback, even if their pushback is ultimately inane. Pearl came out very strong in this detente where she's like, look, all men are better at everything publicly. Statistically, you can prove it. Even the things like cooking or single child raising that you might have assumed the opposite on. She said, even I started out assuming cooking, romance, child rearing, and here are the numbers. And then he laughs at it. And then she comes back and she's like, and he says, oh, well, you think women aren't necessary at all in society? And she's like, no, this would be like if you say adults are better than kids at everything. Does that mean kids aren't necessary? Of course they are. adults are just better. So I think that was a very, this was her strongest set of detente in the whole face off. And he laughed at it as if it was her weakest. This was where Pearl was at her strongest. I'm trying to think where Klavan was at his strongest. He was pointing out her inconsistency and the red pill's inconsistency about marriage, which is, but his was limited strength because he's ceding to her the point that he should be defending, that marriage is not a high-risk proposition. B is less than PL, the Judge Learned Hand formula. Yes, it's a giant L, but if you do things right, it's a very, very, very small P. Probability and loss are the P and the L. It's a giant L, but you have total control over it. If you pray once a day, then the P drops to less than a tenth of a percent. So ultimately, it's P times L, the probability of the loss times the magnitude of the loss. This is how all torts courts have taken to figuring the burden on the potential tortfeasor to make a change. It works for just private decision-making, and it works very well for marriage. Yeah, divorce is a giant loss, especially for men, but it's a very small probability if you play your odds right and you just say, I'm a Christian, I'm only looking for Christian women, and I'm looking to follow the Christian rules and for women who follow the Christian rules. Neither Pearl nor Andrew Klavan, this is my takeaway, want to restrict their audience to rule-following Christians because it's not a big enough audience. That's the truth. That's the truth here. People who do this want as big an audience as they can get, and neither of them wants to say, oh, I'm just talking to Christians that are interested in following the rules. Christians that are interested in following the rules can basically drop the probability of divorce to zero. The numbers show this. Polls in the middle 90s and the middle 20-teens both verified that the odds are less than 1 in 1,000 of getting a divorce if you're a Christian who prays. Maybe it wasn't even a Christian, but almost everyone was. Pray together once daily with your spouse. Less than 1 in 1,000. They won't mention it.
I mean, you know, I think that women are better. Be wary. I mean, I've watched your videos. At no point in your video do you say this is a high reward. A marriage is a high reward thing. And every man, every happily married man I know, you know, puts his marriage at the center of his world. I mean, I put my marriage as high as anything in my life, besides maybe God, as a source of happiness.
What about your purpose? Does your purpose come first or your marriage come first?
Well, my marriage is so tied up in my purpose that I don't even know how to separate them.
Okay, so this is probably the best line he said. Every man my age I know who's happy is married, and every happily married man puts his marriage at the center of his life. This is not an instance of weak anecdote. This is strong. It's true. It's true with all of us. Any man who's 60 is miserable if he's single, and if he's happily married is one of the most happy people you know. And the only way to have a happy marriage when you're 60 that's lasted 40 years is to have your wife at the absolute center of your life. And he said, underneath maybe God. And that's the beginning of where his strong statement became weak, because he's a Protestant and he said, maybe God. Well, yeah, your marriage subserves your relationship with God insofar as it's a sacrament. Now, for Protestants, they took sacraments and they threw them into the fire in the Protestant rebellion. So they don't have sacraments. So he's not able to articulate, Andrew Klavan, even though he's saying good stuff here otherwise, how his marriage subserves God. Because yes, my relationship with my wife, Steph, is at the center of everything I do. And it's most important to me in all ways aside from God. And then he says, well, I can't even articulate how or why it's underneath my mission here, vis-a-vis God.
I've accomplished.
Listen.
My marriage is so tied up in my purpose that I don't even know how to separate them.
My marriage is tied up in my purpose, and they're inseparable, because we have this term, you know, the form of Christianity that built Western civilization, Andrew, Roman Catholicism, the one that properly knows matrimony is a sacrament. It means that it's my path to God, to serving God and to getting to heaven. Literally, there's a sacramental fork in the road. Most people, most Christians will receive six of the seven sacraments if they're on the path to heaven. This is why you need to become Catholic. And most people in ordinary circumstances will pick between the sacramental vocation of ordination and matrimony. And that's why I can articulate what you can't. My path is serving God through having a wife and having kids and populating the pews, the giving more sheep to the pastor at church on Sunday to preach to. The pastor's vocation is to help all those sheep who have been procreated by all of the families, help them get to heaven. And he's the, you know, like the leader of the flock there at church. All the fathers are the leader of the flock there at home. And together, if we do all this in a coordinated way, now I'll grant you the church is really messed up, has been since before Vatican II. The pinnacle is in the Francis pontificate. I would grant Andrew Clavin that, of course. And I can articulate the way forward in all this mess. But the point is, I can make heads and tails of how marriage is related to my soteriology, my path, which is to say my subservice of God. My marriage subserves my relationship with God, subserves God himself. He can't, and this is just a Protestant Catholic thing. But otherwise, he was doing kind of well, saying that all happy middle-aged people are married if they're not priests. He didn't say.
I mean, I don't even know how I could have accomplished. I mean, I got the life. If I had written out the life I wanted, I got that life. I would not have had that life without my wife.
And
And she thinks he's like kissing up to his wife or cucking here. That he's not. I believe him. And this is how I feel, right? Like I'm the one that supplied. Here's the path. This is what we're gonna do. Steph has supported me, and anyone that knows me knows what she does behind the scenes is amazing. Now that's not false humility. That's not completely denying what Pearl's saying, that it's like a guy like Clavin or whatever, to whatever limited strength and virtue I've been able to implement toward this vision of this channel or whatever else. I had that, but you need a helpmeet, and you get more efficient, not less, when you get a good wife. When you get a great wife, you get vastly more efficient, and so did I, and I know that Andrew Clavin is being honest here. And I've never met this man, but I know he's being honest. I can see the sincerity there. It feels dishonest when he says, oh, you know, my wife and all the women like her are more generous than all men. I'm like, that's too much. But absolutely what I believe this man's wife does, he's been married a long time, is support him in his career, not his vocation. His vocation supports his career, and you can feel the sincerity, and Pearl just doesn't get it. Partly just as a single person, maybe without, she doesn't sound like she's seen a lot of truly happy marriages. She talks to a lot of divorced men and a lot of skanky hoes. It's kind of what she does on her channel, and it just doesn't seem like she is capable of believing him. Same thing when I was on her channel and I told Pearl, well, I run a Christian matchmaking outfit. Soon we're going to have, we think, four or five. It's going to be amazing when we do. Four or even five proposals within 1 year of this thing, which are better numbers than like 100,000 times population website servers, dating servers. And what we do is we interview, what do you want, women? What do you want, men? What's your body count? What body count do you want? And I was telling Pearl, yeah, we have a lot of really low virgins or low body count women and men. And she's like, well, they're all lying. She's adversely colored by the fact that she's hanging out with a bunch of divorced men and a bunch of skanky hoes. That you lie down with dogs, you wake up with fleas kind of thing. And she can't believe that a man like Andrew Clay. Sometimes she says, well, you're the outlier. You have a good marriage to him. But then out the other side of her mouth, other times she's like, she doesn't seem to believe that he is not just flattering his wife when he says she's really helped me, which I believe. I believe him because I have one of those wives.
Don't doubt that. Good marriages exist.
Yeah, so she goes back and forth a lot on that.
I wouldn't say that I frighten them. I would say I interview men that have been disproportionately affected by divorce.
Yeah.
I interview men that have lost everything. And this is why I say it is very serious, because I have seen men on the brink of suicide. There is like a death in a guy's eyes, and I can't even describe it. Like when you meet someone that has had his entire reputation ruined, everybody thinks he's an abuser. It stresses him out so bad that he loses his job. He's paying child.
You know what they should have done, Pearl? They shouldn't have said happy wife, happy life. They should have read the, at least every once in a while, the scriptures and the scriptural passages that say how a man and a woman ought to function. Read the Roman catechism where it says duties of a husband, duties of a wife. And they ought to have taken 5 minutes together, 5 or 10 minutes every day, and prayed with their wives. And then they wouldn't have been cuckolded. But cuckolds get cuckolded, just like shoot or shoot. And these, all you manage to not get the point that was looming large and ought to have followed upon the things you're saying. Men who say happy wife, happy life, who are not alphas, get left. Men who are supposed to be leaders, but who follow their followers, their wives, get left. And she's like, well, what else can they do? Lead. Lead. That's the point of a man, is to lead. He executed his whole marriage as a follower, and it's pathetic, and he got cucked. And you're like, oh, all men will get cucked. No, not the one who lead.
Abuses a man, it's a lot different than when a man abuses a woman. I mean, men commit 90.
This was another passage. See, I'm responding honestly to all these. I'm just the representative of patriarchy. Clavin's a bit of a, he thinks he's anti-feminist, but he's got more crypto-feminism than he realizes. A trad con or a fem con or whatever Pearl would call it. She's kind of soft red pill. And I'm just the patriarchy guy. I'm trying to pretend I'm in a room with the three of them. I asked Daily Wire, hey, why don't we get the three of us in a room together, patriarchy, trad femcon, and red pill, and see who comes out on top. For some reason, there's no interest in doing this. It's not a dichotomy. It's a trichotomy here. And actually, they're closer together with each other than they are with me, a patriarch. And so for the second time in this clip, you're going to really hear Clavin really sounding not that subtly like a feminist. This was another shocking part.
5% of all murders.
Listen to what he says. I'll start it over.
A lot different than when a man abuses a woman. I mean, men...
Let me play it again.
...abuses a man. It's a lot different than when a man abuses a woman. I mean, men commit 95% of all murders. 95%. So we have our flaws.
Well, I mean, one out of if you believe abortion's murder, 1 out of 3 women have done that.
Yeah, well, I believe abortion's
homicide. That's a way higher. I mean, the greatest genocide was when they legalized abortion.
Yeah, well, you know,
think that's murder, right?
No, I think that's homicide, but I do understand what you're saying. All right, yeah. I have to stop, and I'm out of time.
So he, I mean, again, well, I think it's just strange. It's very strange to hear Andrew Clavin, who's a Christian conservative, using feminist talking points, and it's probably even more strange because it's more mainstream to be anti-abortion for him to say abortion's not murder. I don't even know. I don't listen to him regularly, but I know he's an overall good man, I think, from things other people have told me, and I know I'm very surprised he doesn't think abortion is murder. And I think there's a conceptual bridge between these two weak spots. He's a crypto-feminist and was spouting more crypto feminism than I expected or Pearl expected. And he says abortion isn't murder. The conceptual bridge is, he said, oh, men commit all the murder. And Pearl's like, no, 1 out of 3 women have had abortion. That might be slightly inflated, but lots of women have had abortions. That's a pretty mainstream conservative thing to call a murder, an abortion. And he's like, well, I think it's homicide, but not murder. What? Abortion is murder, dude. And that's 100% of those are women. So the female numbers on murder go right up. 100% of those are female murderers. And he didn't want to say it. So that's my last clip. I will close as promised by saying I told you in starting where I think they both err together and they share errant presuppositions. Here's where Klavan errs, but maybe uniquely. He denies abortion is murder, working backwards. He doesn't understand how marriage serves a man's purpose, even though he does in some sense intuit marriage serves man's purpose. He doesn't get how because of Protestantism. He believes tacitly that no-fault divorce was an overreaction, but a needful reaction, just it shouldn't have been an overreaction. In other words, he tacit crypto-feminism there. Not that understated. He cedes that marriage is a high-risk proposition to the red pill. It's really not. B is less than PL, as the famous judge Learned Hand once articulated in tort law. Burden to make a change is less than the probability of a loss times the magnitude of a loss. What he probably meant to cede, even though he said it incorrectly, is yes, divorce is a very large magnitude loss should it happen, but it's a very small proposition to a practicing Christian because all you have to do is pray together once a day for 5 minutes and your odds of getting a divorce as a Christian are less than 1 in 1,100, less than 0.1%. So he errantly ceded to Pearl that marriage is a high-risk proposition. It's what he should have said is it's a big L but a small p in the Learned Hand formula. B is less than PL. He dodges very strong evidence of women's average now social grievous faults. She presents really strong evidence of this, and he's just in a kind of politically correct way just not really wanting to let her enunciate what those really messed women are really messed up nowadays. Young women on average, not all of them, but most of them. Pearl uniquely on her own errs by, she's a Catholic, remember, or at least was raised one. She separates more dichotomously than Andrew Klavan did a man's purpose from his marriage. She dodges my statistics I've thrown at her in person, or not in person, but I've like DM'd them to her, and she reacted to them in an obfuscatory way on Twitter publicly. My statistics showing that married men are happier, and Klavan's too. She evades entirely the fact that future divorcees have tells, men and women. They're very, very, very broad stroke, very reliable statistical tells that future divorcees have. If you're a future divorcee, you will deny submission or daily prayer. You'll want to have a secular marriage. Of course you're going to get divorced if you try to take a Catholic sacrament out of context. They don't pray. They don't submit. They have high premarital sex. Remember, if you have sex with more than 10 partners, the way the red pill, like Myron Gaines, admonishes to, this makes your odds of getting a divorce go up by about 650%. If you have premarital sex with only 3 people, it goes up about 350-400%. Pearl just evades that. Also, contraception, which is implicit in Pearl and the red pill saying you should have premarital sex or live-in girlfriend. Contraception's implicit. It makes your odds of divorce go up by 1.5 to 2 times before or during a marriage. She's way off on that. She cites the fact that marriage and family are the Zoomer's 7th priority as a kind of strike against marriage instead of as a strike against Zoomers. That's odd. She obscures the fact that there are as few marriageable men by the ideal standards she holds against women as women. And this is mainly because both men and women nowadays have become disgusting petri dishes of skanks, and none of them have low body counts. And I just read you the hard facts, Pearl, that if you have a high body count, you're very likely to get a divorce. The body counts you're flirting with are 600% divorce likelihood raising. She also obscures, this is thoroughgoing in all of her treatment of the marriage question. She deliberately, I think, obscures the definition of what an alpha is. It's a very basic definition. An alpha is the wolf that the betas and the deltas all follow. And the gamma eventually has to follow. She says, well, you can be an alpha even if no wolves follow you. You're a divorced man. You're an alpha if you're a billionaire wolf, even if your kids hate you and your wife hates you. And no wolves follow you. No, you're not an alpha, by definition of what the term means. She obscures that. And, you know, so she, even though she's like, well, I'm not against you and the patriarchy thing, Tim, I just don't love marriage or whatever, however she would characterize it. She's like, I think women, I guess, should be obedient, but how are women supposed to be obedient if they don't get married? So Pearl and the Red Pill are broadly speaking against divorce. And I think Andrew Klavan and the trad cons or the crypto feminist cons are against submission, wifely submission, which is the main thing that makes marriages work and avoid divorce. That's it. It's because neither side is patriarchalist. Do me a favor. Go watch this video. It's 35 minutes. You watch it on 1.25 speed, which is pretty much what I watch everything on. And it's going to get you under a half hour. You know, 28 minutes or something at that point. 27 minutes. It's worth watching. And leave a comment. You don't have to leave a comment on this video. I appreciate it. But leave a comment and say, why don't you talk to a patriarchy bro? A Christian patriarchy bro. Why not Will Nolan? Why not Tim Gordon? Why not bring the third side, the true solution bringer, into the equation? Why gatekeep them out of the equation? I don't get it. Say that. I never ask you guys to leave comments on other people's channel. That would help. Literally, these are the solutions. They're talking as if it's an aporia, an insoluble problem. It's not. God wills that we solve this problem because the family is the original single cell of society. God wills it. Deus vult. God bless you all.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.